This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 3rd of September 1962. The title of this lecture is Your Scientology Orgs and What They Do For You. This lecture is 50 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
I'm really awfully sorry for the delay there. The delay was occasioned, quite honestly, however, as I had to check off several more goals. And this is a hard business. Anyhow, when am I going to get enough time? Just when am I going to get enough time to audit all these cases? I'm afraid you're going to have to help me out. Will you? Quite amazing, actually. This is very unusual. We have taken person after person over the jumps at St. Hill. And central organizations now are starting to make clears. And this is all very important. Of course, the first and most important step, and the one that was most difficult to do with accuracy, was to find the goal. And looks like we got it licked. Looks like we got it licked. Now, of course, I know that your case, in your case... If it gets too rough, I'm always on the other end of a telex. Now, just to reassure you about this, Scientology organizations keep expanding. We are an expanding network across the world, and this is pretty sneaky. I just informed by a telegram we have now established our beachhead within the United States Navy. It's called SciNav, and it seems to be a well-established fact, according to a dispatch that was just read to me a few minutes ago. I got about 700 members, and isn't the Navy's. You don't quite get the significance of that, see? It's ours. See, that's our beachhead. Navy for years has been saying, we are watching it. We are keeping an eye on it. We are studying it. We collect all the literature on it, you see. And then we establish the beachhead. Well, now, don't feel too left alone. This planet has been getting very small. It's getting smaller and smaller and smaller. After all, it's only a planet attached to a 12th-rate sun. And although the egocentric aspects of man lead him to believe it's the only inhabited world anywhere in this universe, One day, he may be very surprised. I suppose after they send something up to the moon, it will become very, very surprising. Who knows? The first return flight to Canaveral from the moon, you see, the first return flight, why, I can see it now. The door opens up, you see, and the two astronauts they've sent step out of the door and... they're handcuffed together, and there's a small doll with a blaster behind them. And the doll says, put these men in safe custody. You're in contravention of intergalactic navigational regulations, paragraph 3, section 16. Flights without filing flight plan. cluttering space with debris. No decontamination certificate for spores and germs before takeoff. Flying through prohibited sectors. And sending human beings into space who have not been processed to clear. Well, be that as it may, you'll forgive me my fairy tales. But our organizations on this planet have been spreading out further and further. We've been pushing hard along this line. But what makes an organization? It's a communication line. And communication lines of Scientology organizations now do reach about the distance from here to the moon and back. I mean, we got lots of communication lines. Every office we have now of importance has a telex. This, of course, is the same thing as the Western Union has used for ages, which is the teletypewriter system. These teletypewriters are in very close communication with one another. All you have to do is call up another teletypewriter and start typing. A lot of data can flow through that way. For instance, the day I stepped off the Queen Elizabeth, the New York organization took a thick sheaf of paper away from me, which were the next HCOBs, and threw them on the telex, and they appeared within the hour in St. Hill, you see. That is, typed them through to St. Hill. It's this type of communication. It's also the organization which backs up such a communication system. The number of these organizations now are about the same as they were before when you speak of central organizations on a continent. But these have been afforded now branch offices into the various other cities which are responsible to the central organization for their communication lines. This is quite important. Building an organization on a planet is very difficult. Unless, of course, you want to sell it out and sell out all of its purposes and rights and pervert it and do other things to it. But we've done this all pretty well on our own. And a bunch of very loyal, decent guys have been working on this the world around and been putting the flag up here and there until finally it's with perfect confidence that one can say what our conditions in Perth and know in the first place they're not too bad and know within an hour or so exactly what the conditions are, or actually sit down on the telex and talk it over with the HCO secretary in Perth, with, of course, a permanent record of the situation afterwards. London, of course, is quite close to St. Hill, and the pictures you've just seen is actually contain... The pictures were pretty good. I hope you liked them. Anyway, HCOWW is now eliciting complaints from town and county planning. This is an organization dedicated to the worsenment of mankind. The way it's dedicated that way is they won't permit any new decent buildings to go up without a 2 or 3 year argument, you see, as to what the plan shall be. So as a result, everybody has to erect a tenement or something of the sort to fill the gap. Factories can't expand, nothing can happen at all, because there these fellows sit and they have to okay the planning. Actually, the pictures of the buildings you saw were built without any recourse to town and county planning of any kind whatsoever. And town and county planning came down and nattered. And it gave me some bad moments. Because they have the authority to tell you to tear down anything you have put up. But this operates as a sort of a threat. And our next set of plans are for a building out on one of the clear spaces that you saw photographs of there. Reg might have pointed it out to you. Set of plans are being drawn for, or have been drawn, and are being improved at this minute for a proper central, which merely operates as a communication network and as a training center. Because our communication network facilities are what are driving us out of house and home much more than students. They are not adequate in terms of space. They're adequate in terms of communication, but we need more space to house them. controlling communication lines of that length and complexity. And if you've had a sudden upsurge, even a tiny one, everything starts to blow fuses. People come in looking haggard and aged, you see. Messages are pouring out all over the floor. It's very funny, but a telex machine, they write, you know, just like an ordinary typewriter. And I have a lot of fun operating these things. They only operate at 66 words per minute is the speed at which they operate, so you have to kind of slow yourself way down, you know, and putter along with it. And they pour endless, well, rolls of paper, you see, and they come out the back of the machine, up through glass and so forth, and pour down. And every once in a while, after you come in after an evening, and London will have been busy, or somebody else will have been busy, and this paper is all over the back of the machine, you see, and is working itself back up the wall again, you know. And you've got some yards of paper on the thing. It's quite remarkable. They have little tapes, and Creed and Company has already designed us a tape system for our next step up. And it's a cut perforated tape. You put this on a little tape insert machine, and it goes in here, and it goes through, and there's holes there, and there's little feeler fingers, and they feel out what letter it is, and they strike it on a machine. So you have tape cutters, and they cut these long tapes, and then they're fed into the machine, and all they do at the other end, of course, is cut a tape. In other words, they use the double line which governments furnish for one telex machine. You run two telex machines on it. You put a tape cutter here and a tape sender there, you see, and then over here you've got a tape receiver, and then you've got another tape sender and another tape receiver, and these reels and reels of, that's very small tape, it's about so big. And it just reels in by the yard, and it even rolls itself up automatically and stores itself. Well, that system will have to go in one of these days. Well, why is this? It has to do with cases, it has to do with people, it has to do with problems, organizational patterns, and one has to keep his eye very, very carefully and closely on what's going on. Well, why does one? It isn't because people in central organizations are not reliable. That's for sure they are. The thing that goes awry, if anything, is to go awry, is the fact that they have too much traffic or too little traffic. In other words, in terms of the public, they have an adjustment to the thing, and they want to give the best possible service they can give. Well, of course, with changing technology, this has been very, very hard on these fellows. But not for a minute did I ever let the fact that it was rough on somebody slow me down from trying to hit a very highly workable, immediately productive level of knowledge. I've never permitted this to happen. You'd be surprised how many complaints are lodged with me to this direction, you see. Well, now, Ron, if you'd just be satisfied, you see, if you'd just be satisfied with this thing, why, you know, it'd be better. You know, we'd all be more comfortable and so forth. And if I'd ever said, well, all right, that makes sooth, we might have been more comfortable in terms of what we were studying, but we wouldn't have had any clears on our hands with great rapidity, and we certainly would never have dared to attack world clearing. You've got a problem here in terms of keeping the technology straight. You would be amazed how many commas and periods and misplaced words can appear at the other end of a line. Now, you yourself have got this problem's intensive straight. You saw me describe it to you. You saw a demonstration of the thing. Now, you go back home and tell somebody about it to the best of your ability. And he tells somebody about it. And then he tells somebody about it. And then this auditor in Texas is running a problems intensive. And it goes something like this. What can you suppress? Why haven't you suppressed it? Who has suppressed you? On and on. The buttons, other buttons, never appear. Nothing backs it up. Somebody in Alaska about this time gets the word that the prime thing you're supposed to do is be careful. Be careful. And it just doesn't go anyplace, that's all. My main job, and so on, you may look on my job in this as producing material. All right, fine, that's correct. Straightening out things, auditing people, doing all these things, you may look on that as my primary job. But I got hats and hats and hats and hats. In order to make that material effective and produce results where it is going, it is also necessary to wear an administrative hat and a communicator's hat and a publications hat and a writing hat. It goes on and on, you see. And then, of course, all the quarters that you've seen pictures of being built there at St. Hill, well, oddly enough, they dump that hat on me, too. And then once in a while, some new student will come up to me or see me around and say, "Ron, it is pretty cold on the second floor." And I fool him. I do something about it. So you've got all kinds of things. You also, I get a complaint from Australia that the central organization headquarters are too hot in summer, and can't I do something about it? And I do something about it. These are hats, hats, hats. And it isn't because people aren't effective or doing their jobs. It's because people are more and more prone to look to the source of things in order to get something done. And they sort of get grooved this way, because in other businesses and activities and organizations and associations, you can only look to the source of things to get something done. And it's been one of my hardest jobs in Scientology to make it so that somebody else wore his hat. You look at the first foundation. I wore all the hats, even bought all the desks. They went to pieces. It went to pieces for various reasons. One of them was I didn't have control of it. I couldn't guide his destiny. Some other things were pertinent there. But basically, there was nobody. There was nobody to wear any of these hats who could wear them or wanted to wear them or tried to get the show on the road. They were all involved in confusion. In other words, we were dealing with fellows whose cases were worse than worse, who were having difficulty, who were everything was kind of rough in all directions. Now, the ease with which I have been able to accomplish my mission, not of getting somebody else to wear his hat, but to take some responsibility for getting the show on the road and to express initiative in getting that job done, is a direct level line with the advanced processing has made. How do you like that? The better processing is, the more people wear their hats and share responsibility on this and show initiative and get the show on the road. And I can measure immediately how effective a central organization is by the amount of decisions they require from me. And the less decisions, the better they're doing. The better their staff clearing is, the better training they're doing, the better processing they're doing. Of course, that goes the other way, too. You might not hear from them for 2 or 3 months and then find they weren't there. But there's a happy medium to this sort of thing. The funny part of it is everything we've put there is still there since 1952, with one tiny exception, Dublin. And because Dublin was run from London, and Dublin looked on London as running it, and London looked on Dublin as a hardship it had to put up with, we no longer have Dublin. It's just as well. But we've got to put the flag up again in Dublin, just as a matter of principle, because that makes it a clean sweep. That makes it all fine. Now, when we do this, however, when we do this again, we're going to have to send about a 5-goal clear over there to do it. Because it takes some doing. One of the interesting things about Dublin, they'll come in for a PE course, that's for sure. And they'll listen, but there's one thing they hang up on. Create. They hang up right there. They cannot conceive themselves as ever having created anything, never about to create anything, and that they have no slightest right to create anything. And that's what you're up against there. Now, that's quite amazing. And it's a terrible job. PE instructors practically blow their brains out. They can't get across our standard PE course. But there is a cycle of action. You know, they hang up right there. We'll even whip that. We'll even whip that. Well, one of our difficulties in holding together an organization is people. And these are awfully good people in central organizations. These are terrific people. At a sacrifice of considerable income and a lot of other sacrifices, these fellows and girls stay on the job and get the job done. One could not render a high enough tribute to them because it has not been easy, and they have done it extremely well. And they're still there, and they've still got the show on the road. And now we're thinking in terms of new buildings and designing new buildings all over the world. In other words, we've kept it there for a long time. Now we're going to keep it there with exclamation points. We've even got the designs for these buildings. Johannesburg is going mad because I just won't give them the word to go ahead on somebody's willing to build them a building and let them have the second, third, and fourth floors of this building for our headquarters and so on. And they've got this deal. It's beautifully arranged and everything's fine. But that isn't the point. It wouldn't be their building. And they would outgrow it so fast they wouldn't know what hit them. They would no more get moved in to this new 5,000 or 6,000 square feet of floor space than they would have outgrown it. Actually, it requires two types of building in one of these central organizations. It requires a city building, one that is downtown and rises straight up from the ground to some height. And it requires one out in the country, which sprawls all over the place on one floor. And next time I give you Congress, I'll probably show you some models of these buildings, providing they haven't already been built. Anyway, they housing these central organizations, making these stay there, making them stay solvent, and keeping their technology straight has been quite a job. And that hat and its responsibility has been shared by a great many people. You're probably surprised to see that we had here 76 staff members from U.S. organizations. The bulk of them here, of course, at FCDC. But, of course, that isn't the complete complement. And you look out across the world and add this up, and there are an awful lot of people involved in staffs. Now, this is what's funny. I can't tell you how many. I can't give you that figure now. More important than that, I can't tell you how many trained auditors there are on any continent just now, because my figures antiquate all the time. Another thing, I can't tell you how many members of groups there are in the world. That figure I can't tell you. And I can't tell you how many people are interested in Scientology throughout the world. I try to get these figures, but it is nearly impossible to achieve them. They antiquate with great speed. And you just about get all the data in from South Africa, and immediately it's old. It is growing at considerable speed. Now, these things tend to go by the square. They tend to go by the square. And it's going to get worse before it gets better. Much. I'll read you a list offhand here. This is an incomplete list of organizations. There's, of course, HCO St. Hill, which is Scientology's Grinstead Telex 8876. There's HCO London, which is London Telex 25383. There's HCO DC, which has Telex Scientology, or Cien, S-C-I-E-N, 2440125. There's HCO Los Angeles, which is Western Union Telex 067262. There's HCO New York, which has Telex 012032. There's HCO Johannesburg, which is Telex number 7405. There's HCO Durban. Well, I could go on down the line considerably. It's mainly by telephone number, don't you, or by address. To us these days, it's by Telex number. Why? We can beat any opposition, this was the original reason it went in, with fast communication. Somebody started monkeying around in Perth, and we had more data on it, and had more data returned to Perth about it, and had more things assembled in the rest of Australia because of telex and so forth than anybody ever dreamed of. They thought, well, we'll go down here to Perth, and we'll monkey around with this organization, and if we're successful here, see, why, then we'll go on and we'll attack the main organization in Australia, and then maybe we'll have some success there. Man, that looked like Gettysburg the day after. And we didn't have any dead on the field. There was none of our colored uniform was there. Now, that's important. Recently, in Los Angeles, up the line from Los Angeles, a place called Eureka. And the prosecutor, the public prosecutor, something of the area, decided that Eureka, I have found it, I have found the Achilles heel, and he piled in on the top of an auditor there, a branch, a little town organization, and he came in on top of this with a crash, and he thought he was really going to get someplace, and telex roared. And the next thing you know, there was more orders passed and more data gathered and more things done than, well, the legal wheels, of course, they were about 3 years behind us by the time we had done this. And not only was this entire case dismissed, but the public prosecutor of that area is now being sued with every evidence of success for $250,000 libel for having touched our coattails. In other words, we don't run these days, we bite. This is all done with rapid communication. Now, that sounds like a defensive action. The defensive action is totally, entirely secondary to another action, which is getting the information out, making sure the show is on the road, making sure things are going straight. It has been my ambition for a very long time to be able to say to any human being on Earth that they could walk up to any organization of Scientology, whether it was a center, a city office, or a central organization, be able to walk in the front door, and at the end of some, well, you could even say a nebulous number of hours of processing, emerge out of that front door clear. And that has been a very steady ambition. Now, what does that take to do that? That takes a terrific accuracy of duplication of material. It takes a fantastic amount of skill and training. It takes a high level of dedication, above all other things, on the part of the staff, and that ambition right now is being realized. The reason St. Hill training went in was because I realized that we had to hold a very high standard of auditing, and we are doing just that. In other words, we mean business on this thing. When they come out, it's very funny. They leave home, and they are very happy about everything they are doing, and so forth, and they say, well, it'd be nice to be around St. Hill for a little while. And you know, see Ron occasionally, you know, and then be able to come home and tell everybody I've been trained at St. Hill. You see, that's their idea. And without a clue as to what fate awaits them, they take off and go to St. Hill. Well, the auditing they've seen around them, that they've seen in their academy, and they've seen in their group, and see people doing, that if it's making people well, and it's doing fine, and everybody is happy with it, and there's no trouble with it in any way. And they come to St. Hill. And I hate to tell you that some of them, in their first 2 or 3 weeks, begin to call it with another letter. It's sort of like they think they've made a mistake. And that is to say, not coming, but a mistake in their destination. They're up there in the morning and on the run, and there they go at 9:30, and they're fed into their practical unit or their theory unit, and they go straight on through with this. They go into their auditing sessions. They do this and they do that, and the next thing you know, they are actually permitted to audit a PC. Oh, that sounds rather remarkable, isn't it? These guys are trained auditors. Some of these fellows are the best auditors in the world prior to St. Hill training. And we don't even let them touch a PC. Who would? Yeah, I mean, it's that type of attitude on the part of the instructors. It's very snide. These instructors are very snide people. They're vicious. Absolutely death on bad auditing. Somebody misses a comma in model session. They go, oh, God, you know, oh, God. Did you hear what you said? The fellow says, I just said, do you have a present time problem? That's what we're talking about. That's what we're talking about. You said, problem. No. You'll get a read on the pra. You want to get problem. Even it out. Smooth it out. The fellow said, my God, I never heard of anybody being this mean about anything. They do it just because they're after me, you know? They're down on me. That's why they're doing this sort of thing. Auditors for a long time now have been sitting there comfortably with their meter on their lap and auditing people with a meter. Great dependency on the meter. They get into what we call the X unit, rudiments and havingness. That's all they're permitted to audit on the PC. They're permitted to get the rudiments in, find the havingness process, run a few commands of havingness, get the end rudiments in, that's end of session. Now, there's a thing called a GAE, which is a gross auditing error, and GAE is a slang term for being kicked out of the auditing section. They're returned from the auditing section for heavier work in practical and theory. Bang. And that's called being GAE'd. And they committed a gross auditing error. They left the comma out of a model session, see? Of course, all these errors, real errors in auditing, are actually very gross. That's fantastic how gross they are. You know, the auditor didn't come to the session. You know, it's that gross an error. And these students are now expected at the end of the week to have their rudiments checked by an instructor on a TV demonstration in front of all the other students. So they've been auditing Joe, who of course is a fellow student, and they get all of this material. They've got it all worked out, and Joe goes up there, and Joe sits up in front of the instructor, you see, who is on the meter in my auditing room there, and he in the last session, which you were given, or words to that effect, did you have, or were you willing to talk to the auditor about your difficulties? Clang, the needle goes. In that session you just had, was there anything you failed to reveal? Clang! In that session you just had, did you have a present time problem? Clang! The guy's sitting there, he's watching this meter. And he says, well, there's something wrong. There's something wrong with me. It's crazy. There's something wrong with the way the TV screen tracks the needle. Or there's something wrong there that the PC must have gotten a problem after the session. Maybe he isn't hearing what the instructor said or something, because I couldn't possibly miss this many meter reads on a PC. They did. You can always tell an older student, as he doesn't bother to complain about a rudiments check or something like that. He knows they were in, or he knows they were out, and if they were out, they will be found, and if they're in, why, everybody will pat him on the back. Well, all right, that's very duress, because he's out of auditing for the next week if he finds two or more rudiments out of the whole span of rudiments on his PC for the week of auditing he's just given. He got a couple of rudiments out, bang, that's it, he's had it. That's GAE, and he finds his name down on the board next morning, and it says, GAE, Joe Blitz. He's had it. Now, you think that's rough. That isn't rough. That's nothing. The student and the XY units do their auditing without an E-meter and are expected to have all their rudiments in at the end of the week. That almost makes them operating thetans before they begin, you know. Pretty fantastic. And they see Ron once in a while, and always happy when I talk to him for some reason, right? And, of course, course, I'm always glad to see them. And you see them 1 week, and they look pasty and gray and disheveled, the straw sort of sticking in their hair, you know. Or they look like an unrescued corpse of some kind or another. And you say, what's the matter? And he says, oh. I say, well, it'll be all right. You'll pick it up. Next week, I see the guy. Well, hiya, Ron. Hiya. He's bright, shining, everything's fine, everything's going gorgeously, so forth. There's no telling what happened. He either got GAE'd, or he picked up his GAE, or he had a win on his PC. Something like this has been going on, or he had a win in his own case, you know, and so on. You say, well, that guy's out of the woods. I don't have to worry about that now. 2 weeks go by, you come around the corner, walking down the road, and you run into this guy, and there he is, disheveled, gray, so far. They go over the jumps. They go up and they go down. But they always make an inevitable and invariable remark when they get home. They always ride back to St. Hill and they say, good God, there isn't a single person in this area that could audit. And then they'll natter on for a while and say how bad it all is in this area. And then they finally get down to the end of the line and they say, well, I suppose it was acceptable to me when I left, but I sure can't remember. It puzzles them how that they could call that auditing. Oh, these guys are pretty good. I mean, there is the upgrade that we're attempting on the line. Now, as we pour central organizations full of St. Hill graduates, these people really snap the level of auditing up, and gradually central organization auditing skill has come up to this level. That's very important. In other words, we've been going through a terrific upgrade of auditing skill for the last year and a half, and that's what St. Hill is all about. We're not trying to do it for St. Hill. Everybody loves Mary Sue there. Well, everybody's very fond of Mary Sue anyhow. But Mary Sue would be very happy to sit down in beautiful Sussex and be busy around about the house and so forth. She'd be very happy to do this, and she'd be very happy to just have the kids and have nobody else in the house, you see. She'd be very happy to do this. She's not unhappy otherwise, but she'd be happy to do that. And I, too, I'd think it'd be marvelous. It's been many a day since I could walk out of my office with my hat pushed down over my eyes, going out to see whether or not the rhododendrons are blossoming properly, or sit down and look at the water in the lake and speculate on the eternity of nowhere. It's been many a day. I walk out of the house, somebody always says, hi, Ron! Listen. Perfectly all right with me. I'll give you an idea. We didn't start training people at St. Hill for any other reason than to upgrade auditing around the world. And we're doing it. It's being successful. These people are being terrific. When you go to St. Hill, of course, you're looked upon thereafter as an example. Well, that's rough. That's too bad. So, of course, you have to be a good example. I'm very proud of the people who leave St. Hill. Most of them leave all in one piece. Very few come apart. And I don't let them go. I don't let them go unless I think they're ready. And this also works a hardship on the instructors, on the course, on everything. Because it overloads the course here and there. The over 50% of the students on course are overtime students that I just won't let go till their goal has been found, or I won't let go unless I think their auditing is good. And so forth. And there's about 50% of the people now on course are waiting for me to get home because then I can tell them whether they can go yet or not. And I keep it in my paws just this, because I'm not letting somebody go away from there who won't be able to get wins in auditing. This I don't want to do. I know I'm looking at three or four of them now and there, saying, that's so true. That's so true. I'm looking at one that was there week after week and month after month. She's not ready yet. Well, it paid off. She came home when she appeared in the North in the organization up in New York. Why, everything started upgrading like mad. In other words, there's person after person. They make these little zones of order. Things start going right in that zone. I'm very proud of them. St. Hill, of course, sooner or later produces somebody who can't stay long enough, who won't stay, or something like that. We give them a departure unauthorized. That means I didn't tell them they could go. Nobody's going to stop them, but I said they couldn't go. So their grading is not course incomplete, but departure unauthorized. That's all that means, is I didn't say they could go. That way, we're trying to hold the line of technology. That is what we are trying to do. Now, these people in central organizations throughout the world are holding up that standard and are making that standard stick. And the auditing reports are getting better and better and better. You take, well, I shouldn't specially name 1, 2, 3, 4 St. Hill graduates because we're getting lots of them. There are lots of people going through there. Of course, it's rough because it really isn't an academy type building or structure or training. It's just my house, and there's a big room in the basement, and there's some outside rooms, and everybody, of course, it's a big house, but it wasn't tailored up for exactly what it's being used for. But I'll go through anything, and so will these guys, to get the show on the road, and that's about the way it is. Of course, I will say that it is warmer in winter in England than it is in the northern United States. It's also wetter. And an American, when he first comes over there, just can't take any of the food or anything else. He said, this is horrible, or it's very cute, or it's very unique, or it's this, or it's that, but it's not home. And when they leave there, they can eat with a Cockney accent as well as any other. That's quite remarkable. You say, why England? Why is this in England? Well, in the first place, the communication line system throughout the world is better from England than from the United States, for particular reason, and also the United States has posed in the past certain difficulties along the line which I just don't care to fool with. That is to say, they're not after me or something like that. There's nothing paranoid in this. It's just the difficulties of finance, the difficulties of this, the difficulties of that. For instance, you can't get any money out of Australia into the United States, but you can get money out of Australia into England, you know. The Australian-English operation can cooperate with one another, but you can't do that. If we were simply operating in the United States only, why, it'd be very stupid to have an organization anywhere but in the United States. But we are not, man. We're not. If the United States can't civilize this planet, we can. And in spite of their cotton-picking consuls, you know, one of our main troubles is from U.S. consuls. They're nuts, man. They're just plain nuts. I don't know what they're trying to advance on the foreign front, but it certainly isn't America. You hold your head over this sort of thing. If anybody calls up a council and asks them anything about one of our organizations and so forth, they try to knock it in the head with no reason whatsoever. We trace back a whole flap that occurred in Melbourne to a bunch of yap that was coming from the American consul in Melbourne and so forth. We knocked him in the head. We had him recalled, we did. But this is the main point. You can't take one tiny portion of a planet and terrifically upgrade it without a terrific overwhelm of all other parts of the planet. It's always easy to take over a planet. All you have to do, oh, most of you guys can think of your old space opera patterns, and you girls too. People of Earth, we come in peace, we bring a plowshare, not a sword. You know, you can always overwhelm. Anybody can overwhelm. I could work on this technology and get it all up straight and figure it out so that we could bust airplanes apart in the sky by looking at them, you know, big OT stuff in one way or the other, and we could go through a terrific overwhelm of this and that and square it all up, and everybody'd be nicely overwhelmed. But I want you to look around you on this planet. That's what's happened. They've been overwhelmed. And we're not trying to overwhelm people. and you start upgrading it in one part of the world, you don't upgrade it in some other part of the world, that other part of the world is going to get an overwhelm, and it's going to mess up one way or the other. One of the most horrible mistakes happening, being done on the part of Russia, is not pushing communism, which is a method of obtaining goods without buying them. That isn't really what's wrong with it. It's the fact they've locked themselves out. Actually, not from other parts of technology, but to a large degree from us. All right, what's going to happen there one day? Something's going to happen. Every time I start processing somebody up the line, he always thinks, well, let's see, what should I do to Russia? They will, too. I don't tell them not to do anything to Russia. I wouldn't raise my little finger to help that outfit. They want to string iron curtains around? Fine. Let's make sure they have good sharp pikes on the top of their iron curtain. We can put heads on it. We're not interested in their political philosophies. They've given us a bad time from time to time. They've given you a bad time. U.S. economy is going to pieces simply because it's in some kind of a silly race with Russia. Something like this can't keep up forever. My whole condemnation of it is they're just not good for people. And you look elsewhere across the world, you can find other activities that aren't good for people either. We're not necessarily against these, but we can certainly raise man above them. All of these things are pertinent. Organizations are dry stuff. Administration is dry stuff. Communication lines have apparently very little to do with whether or not you get clear. But from where I sit, I would be so entangled continuously with everything else that we would never get the job done if it weren't for these things. So to me, they loom very important. And to you, they should loom important, that the technology, when developed, arrives and stays in a pure and decent state and is applicable and usable. And that's the only thing we're trying to do. It comes home to you someday when you're sitting there and the auditor doesn't know what he's doing. It comes home to you rather heavily that this skill could be upgraded a little bit in this auditor. That is borne home to you. Well, we'll keep it upgraded. Now, it isn't enough just to put it there. You got to keep it there. So there's a continuous effort to do that. All of this is background music to the technology that I've been telling you about at this Congress. It is not more important than that technology, not by a long ways, but if that technology is going to continue to work and to work well for people, then what I'm telling you about in this lecture is very important. You should support your organizations in your area. You should support Scientology organizations. You actually should discourage trying to knock them apart. The reason people get mad at them is they have missed withholds from them, more than the fact that organizations are trying to do something to them or are failing to do something for them. We Scientologists have got to pull together. We can't afford any, there isn't even a whisper of this anywhere in the world. This varies, you see, then, with the standard lecture that you hear, where now that you guys are falling apart, I am pleading with you to pull together. You've been falling apart for years, and I've never said a word. And now that you're all pulling together, three cheers. Thank you.